here at the University of Northern Colorado in Greeley. It is 10:35 in the morning on this fine, rainy, gray Saturday, and we are going all the way to Washington, D.C. to talk with someone who has made fun of the world, and most specifically, its socio-political aspects, for quite a few decades now. If you know him, and I hope you do, it's because you've seen him so many times on public television doing his special. He'd be in that Buffalo Theater in the round, you know, with the carpeting and the piano in the middle, right, and the bow tie. And for a half an hour or an hour, he would just be up there making people laugh about how insane and ridiculous politics is. And certainly, unfortunately, that has not changed. The only thing that has kind of changed, unfortunately, is that we're not seeing Mark Russell regularly on PBS television. I wish we still were. But happily, we do have him here in the neighborhood with us. And so I welcome very, very strongly Mark Russell. Mark, how are you?
So you're in Greeley.
That is correct. I am in Greeley.
You're physically in Greeley right now.
Yeah, there are people living in Greeley.
I have played Greeley, and I remember years ago there was an old showbiz adage that if you don't make it in Greeley, you'll never make it in Pueblo.
Well, did you
it
make
was it? Something yeah. like that. Now, I gather that just from your comments that you are a hard rock heavy metal station, correct?
Actually, and I'm proud to talk up our station, we are a student-run radio station of the University of Northern Colorado, which means, I am the program director here, and what's very important to me...
It sounds like you play classical music.
Oh, I'm sorry, you were joking. Yeah, well, we play... That's the beauty. The students get to play what they want to play. It's freeform radio. They do the shows they want to do. And that's very important to me because so many college radio stations out there have this format, and all their DJs are just professional DJs who can't get jobs anymore. These
are
students.
A student?
I'm getting another master's here, and but I'm a little older than the average student here by about double. But
I see.
Are you interviewing me, or am I interviewing you?
This concludes our interview.
Well, no.
I just wanted to get a sense of everything.
Oh, sure. Well, yeah, that's what we are, and this program streams on the internet all over the country, all over the world. And originally, Dave's Gone By started in New York. We were on a Long Island station for many years.
Then
my wife and I moved out to beautiful Colorado, and I'm doing it here. So,
well, thanks for mentioning the old show that I did. It ran for 30 years. It went off in 2004, and I'm sort of taking some time off, and actually I'm going door to door now.
Yeah.
And I decided to devote the rest of my life to being a benign curmudgeon.
A benign curmudgeon? Isn't that an oxymoron, though?
Or I'll say an amusing dinner guest.
Oh, well, there you go.
But anyway, it was a fun show. It was live, and we had some moments there where something would happen in the news at late in the afternoon, and I'd have to write a song, and I'd have the words of the song literally gaffer tape, scotch taped up to the lens of the camera. We had a very low budget. There were no teleprompter or anything like that. So it could be very dicey at times, but it was fun.
Wasn't that the most exciting part, though, when you had a new story that you kind of had to deal with? Yeah.
Yeah, there were, you know, cabinet members would be fired, and people would be indicted, the old indicted, and then the sex scandals. It got so boring. You'd have an indictment and a sex scandal, and nothing has changed. Nothing has changed at all. Here you had Newt Gingrich saying that he committed adultery because he had such passion for his country. So it was a passion for my country that led me to commit adultery. In other words, Uncle Sam made me do it. So the next time you feel a surge of romance, reach for the Cialis. That's Newt Gingrich's.
No, reach for the Atlas. Reach for
Newt's. Newt's campaign slogan.
Oh, for goodness' sake! And he is running for president again. Like we weren't done with
yeah,
him.
Yeah, I was looking over the old notes. You know, I was joking about him when nobody knew who he was. Remember one time he wrote a steamy sex novel, not to be confused with another work of seduction called The Contract for America. And then about a year later, he said the Democrats are not real Americans. That was in 1994. He said Democrats are not real Americans. And at that very moment, a very young Barack Obama saw this as some sort of an omen. And then the following year, it's a direct quote. He said, "Women should not be in combat because they get an infection in the trenches." This is a man who's considered to be an intellectual.
Well, it
was about a few years ago, he hosted the Larry King show, and at one moment he had a live snake around his neck, and a caller called into the show and said, "Is he poisonous?" And the snake said, "I hope not."
Oh, boom, boom, tsh.
No, yes, no. Thank you. You have your own cymbal sounds there. And then, of course, a few days ago, he announced for the presidency, and he was wise enough not to use any of the old political cliches, such as "my record speaks for itself."
Oh, well, you know, that is kind of the interesting thing now. Any politician out there has to realize that whatever they've done in the past 20 years will now come back again. In the old days, you could kind of, if it was just in the newspapers or something, people could write about it, but there was no real paper trail. Now, any politician honestly has to worry that any whistle stop, anything they say, do, if they fart in the men's room, somebody's going to have that on their cell phone camera. It's going to be on YouTube, and it's out there, you know?
Yeah, it's like last year, you remember Clarence Thomas's wife late at night called Anita Hill. Those of you who remember that case goes back about 15 years ago. Clarence Thomas, very controversial Supreme Court nominee.
Yeah.
And he was accused of having not an affair, but rather unseemly relationship with Anita Hill. And so that's about 20 years ago. Last year.
Yeah.
His wife calls up Anita Hill late at night and says, "You should apologize to my husband." Now, you can imagine that conversation where Clarence Thomas says to his wife, he says, "You know, it's been 20 years since I've had any dealings with the media. I've had a distinguished life on the Supreme Court, and I haven't had to deal with all of this media nonsense. What say you call Anita Hill and stir it all up again?"
Yeah, no. What it is, once you find one pubic hair in your Coca-Cola, it's just something you'll never forget.
Okay, so you are old enough to remember.
I'm 47 years old. I remember anything.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I sound younger? Thank you. Thank you very
yeah,
much.
Yeah, you do. So the college angle there threw me off a little.
Now, can I ask how, if it's not too personal, how old you are?
I'll be 79 very, very soon, yes. I remember Pearl Harbor, but I don't remember what she did.
Oh, wait, I actually do have a rimshot sound effect if you want to hear
it.
I
could never figure out what prompts people to do that barumpump thing. I guess, what does it mean? If it's corny, I guess, right? If it's corny and it sounds too contrived or joke-like. And then it goes back to burlesque. It goes back to vaudeville, where there'd be a drummer there, and right after the comic could do a punchline, and the guy would do a rim shot.
I think I was thinking about this, believe it or not, because someone sent me the URL for a website called InstantRimShot.com,
yeah.
And I ended up using it with Shecky Green. He allowed me to. Which was kind of fun.
Oh, what do you mean he allowed you to? You mean you asked his permission?
Well, yeah.
You didn't ask my permission.
Sorry. Well, I did one verbally earlier, and you were fine with it. I went, bum, bum, tsh.
Well, yeah, but yeah. I thought, well, I hope that's the last one he does.
No, I don't. I've never used them, and I don't like to. But you know, every once in a while, as a gimmick, rather than an actual funny thing, I like to use it. But it occurred to me when I was thinking why people use rim shots. It's that way of doing something after the joke, so you don't get that little moment of silence. You're feeling the silence and going forward. It's like sometimes when I tell a joke, I'll tail it off with, "No, I don't know what that means." Some little bit so that it isn't landing hard on the
touchline. Oh, yeah. Do you remember what Bob Hope would do in lieu of that?
What would he do?
He would say, but I want to tell you.
Mm. Exactly.
And he wouldn't finish it because the laugh is going on.
Right. So he's got
But it was kind of a coda. He'd do the punchline, and so the giraffe said, what's your phone number? But I want to tell you.
Bingo. It's yeah. that moment that gets the comedian segueing out of it. The only person who didn't, Carson would not. Carson would just stand there.
He would tap that. The piano player would go into T for two.
Oh, yeah, you're right. He would.
When a joke bombed, and the piano player, kind of a brave thing to do. I mean, it's maybe Doc Severinsen, who had authority, would cue the piano player, making the instant impression that Carson would not be bothered by this, because the joke obviously bombed. So then the piano player does a da 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 ya da da, and then Carson would do a soft shoe dance, an old tap dance.
That's right.
That's what he would do.
At that point, though, the musicians would leave enough room, though, between the end. It's like the joke ended, and there was enough time to realize that it died.
That's right.
So then they would go into the music.
Just take a pause, and they would do that, and it worked very, very well. I don't know what Leno does in that case. In my opinion, it happens so often. I don't know what he does.
So what do you do when you have, not that you've ever told a joke that bombed, Mark Russell, but when you felt that a joke didn't land?
I've had more bombs in the Air Force, but I want to tell you, just would hit the piano. I would just lean on it and just slap both hands down on the piano, and that would be the equivalent, I guess, of a rim shot. I once did a song back when you couldn't, Jimmy Carter was running, Ted Kennedy challenged Jimmy Carter in the campaign of 1980.
Uh-huh.
And in the primaries. And that was, it was quite a shocking thing for the sitting president to have a Democratic primary. Jimmy Carter said, I'll kick his ass. Now, at the time, in 1980, on public television, and we were a lot more straight-laced, you really couldn't say a kick his ass on PBS, you know.
Okay.
So I had a little dinner bell, a little tiny bell.
Yeah, okay.
At the end of the piano, and so when I say I'll kick his, then it go bing like that, and so I had to say that about a dozen times in the song, and it was cute, you know. It was just, but you couldn't say I'll kick his ass.
Well. Yeah, I mean,
and it was on you for Carter, who was supposed to be such a a very straight laced.
Although
he did say that
he confessed to Playboy that he had lust in his heart. I remember that.
That's right. Yeah.
And not just for Rosalind. I think it was for Mondale, actually. Or
so tame. Yeah. Well, he was, as it happened, he did kick Kennedy's ass. So it was the end of that.
So let me ask: when you are, or do you still perform? I'm sorry. I guess I should know this, but are you still? You were joking before that you still go door to door.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I do, a couple things, little benefits and things like that. But
do you miss it?
I miss it when they got Bin Laden.
Right.
what a moment! And I conversely, when September 11th. I took a couple of weeks off. There were a lot of cancellations. I was very busy at that time. And everybody I've talked to in the business talking about that moment, we had a lot of cancellations, mutually agreed to it. And my gosh, I hope these people cancel, because this is so not the time. And the other night, so I visualized a song where the townspeople, it's kind of like Our Town, you know, Thornton Wilder's Our Town.
Uh-huh.
And they say, oh, there was nothing suspicious but the choppers overhead to take out our neighbor with a hole right through his head. Now we're back to the quiet. Our days are all the same, and we never knew our neighbor because we didn't know his name. A town just like Our Town, smiled upon by God, where we mind our own business here in blind Abbottabad.
Hmm. That's actually very good.
So it was today they found pornography.
Yeah, I know.
and
I've never seen a camel in that position.
What? I'm in a lot of computer, and they contained the old porn classics, Deep Throat and Debbie Does a Abbottabad.
Oh, thank you.
So I would imagine Al-Qaeda pornography probably includes a lot of livestock, wouldn't you say?
Well, they would have deep goat, I think, would be the...
Good? Good? Where's my symbol here?
Look, but let me ask, since you brought up 9/11, and I was really going to go there with doing comedy after 9/11 and stuff like that. What were your thoughts about one of my favorite comedians, believe it or not, Gilbert Gottfried, and what he did fairly shortly after 9/11, and even, again, him being back in the news just a few weeks ago, getting fired for making a joke on a Twitter feed about the whole Japanese Earth? I mean, is there such a thing as too soon, or is a comedian bound by the law of comedy to make the jokes he has to make when and wherever?
Well, first of all, how soon after September 11 did he do that, whatever he did?
Well, you know, you know where it was. It was at a Hugh Hefner Friars Club roast that he did it. But it was like a couple of weeks. New York
couple
was in
of
a
weeks.
I mean, it, you know, it, even though
remember
it was
what the,
weeks,
do you remember exactly what he said?
I'll screw up the joke because I won't tell it right, but he apologized to the audience for being late. He had wanted the airplanes to land in the Empire State Building, but they wouldn't do it. Something along those lines.
Yeah.
And it was just quiet, and somebody yelled, "Too soon!" And
right.
Is there such a thing?
Too soon. There's a comedian... who worked that night. He's probably the only comedian in the country.
You mean on September 11th?
Who was working the night of September 11th. And it was in Las Vegas, and I figure in Las Vegas, being Las Vegas, they probably didn't know about it.
Right, not till the next morning or something, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Something happened in New York?
Yeah
right. Oh.
But what I did, I had a show 2 weeks later.
Ooh.
And it was up in a little town in Michigan, Sturgis, Michigan, is for their Chamber of Commerce. I used to do a lot of Chamber of Commerce and things. And so, I was very nervous. And so I knew you couldn't just open up with a lot of jokes and stuff. So I told them a true story. My wife and I went to New York a couple days earlier than that. This was around the 20th of September. My wife and I were in New York, and we walked down 7th Avenue down toward Ground Zero.
Okay.
And this is a long, long walk. We walked for about an hour and a half. And the streets were lined with pictures, reproduced pictures of relatives. Have you seen my sister? Have you seen my cousin? And note just thousands of them pasted against windows and lampposts, block after block after block. And I'm describing this the way I'm describing to you, see? And pictures that would be on refrigerator doors of family members at the beach in bathing suits, or wedding pictures, or graduation pictures. Just tear your heart out, see? And so I do this, and I've never opened a show like that before, and it's deadly quiet, and I'm telling you this wrenching experience. And then I told the night before George W. Bush made his speech before a joint session of Congress, and even his worst enemies agreed that was his finest hour, that speech.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to the bullhorn right there at Ground Zero, but this was a formal speech in the halls of Congress, and it was a great speech. And I told him that. I said, I watched the president's speech last night, and I thought it was wonderful. And I said, boy, have I changed. See?
Yeah.
And with that, it got a little chuckle. The ice was broken, but it took about 5 minutes for me to reach that moment, see? And then from then on, I just segued to the prepared material. So after the show, Oh, they were very kind, and they said, frankly, we were going to cancel you. And I said, well, you wouldn't be the first, because people have been canceling all over the place the last couple of weeks. And they said, no, we thought, well, you know, we have to laugh in America. And that, well, I'll never forget that little town, Sturgis, Michigan. And so then from then on, a few days later, I had a PBS show, and I had the same opening. And that's how I got over it. And there was a parallel. Mm-hmm. It was the day that Desert Storm, going back to 1991, I was in a theater, and it was in Washington, and this was Desert Storm. Uh-huh. My show was at 8 o'clock. At 7 o'clock, we started to bomb Iraq. Okay? And the initial projections were there were going to be 10,000 casualties.
American, you mean?
American cat, 10,000.
Yeah.
And I'm backstage with the theater manager. By the way, it was Ford's Theater.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Speaking of bullets flying, yeah.
Yeah, and so the manager said, well, people are calling in to make sure that you're going to do a show, see? And I said, all right, we'll do the show. So now it's 8 o'clock, and I've been watching. I had a TV in the dressing room, and you can see the planes are taking off and the carriers, and they're bombing Iraq. So I walk out, and I said, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. There's only one thing on everybody's mind tonight of all nights. Issue one, the leading headline, issue one, should Pete Rose get into the Baseball Hall of Fame, which was in the news at that moment.
Sure.
See? So that was another, you know, little icebreaker to get into that. But there are moments. It was David Brenner who was in Las Vegas. I was trying to think of his name. Yeah, he worked. He made comedy history. He worked September 11th in Vegas.
But he's not all that funny to begin with. So no, I'm kidding. I'm sorry. No.
No, he's good. He's
very
funny.
He's very good. We are talking with a very, very funny comedian, Mark Russell. And this is the thing I wanted to ask you, though. Because you only do the occasional event now and again, you're not doing a regular PBS show or your regular shows. When an event comes up like the Bin Laden thing, and you went and you wrote a song and you've made all these jokes, do you feel frustrated that you're not getting them out there, or where do they go? Do you give them to other performers?
Well, one source of consolation, if that's probably self-pitying word, is that a rule of law, an exact science, that so many jokes that get a 10 on a Monday might get a 3 on a Friday.
Sure, that's the nature, yeah.
And so these huge stories do pass, and then you refer to them in a different way. And so in a few months, the comic would say, hey, you remember when they got Bin Laden? This reminds me of the time they got Bin Laden 5 years ago. See, they'd do it that way. And so but I do. I write a little op-ed column in a bunch of newspapers. I've been doing it for years. Art Buchwald used to do. Art Buchwald was in 450 newspapers, and he's in more papers than any other columnist, I think. And he says, I'm in 450 newspapers, all in Nebraska.
Hey, look, I'm on a radio station in Greeley, Colorado, so I kind of empathize here. You know, not like I'm on Z100 or something like that. Although you make kind of a cool thing, and I'm very proud of you for this, Mark Russell, because you were allied with, of all things, a band called Two Live Crew. Do you want to tell people how you?
Yeah.
I mean, it's on Wikipedia, but if you would like to share you were dealing with them.
Well,
about.
They were involved in a Supreme Court case, which is probably the first time I had ever heard of Two Live Crew. they wrote a parody on a song. Now, which is what I do. I write song parodies.
Of course.
And for years, there's always been a question of how legal is this? Are you ripping off the composer and all of that? And some composers are fine with it. Others are far from fine with it. Anyway, the Two Live Crew years ago wrote a parody on the Roy Orbison song Pretty Woman. And it was a rather disgusting, sexist, terrible song. Okay. And the Roy Orbison estate sues. Oh. And the appellate court rules, or what did they do? They ruled against Orbison. They, no, they how they ruled. Whatever they ruled, okay, it goes to the Supreme Court. See? Now, here's the Supreme Court. And the sleaziest cases get to the court. The sleaziest libel cases, First Amendment cases, they reach the Supreme Court, which makes it kind of funny. And so they ruled 9-0, unanimous. Mm-hmm. Unanimous. This includes Justice Scalia. This includes Thomas. This includes Rehnquist at the time. 9-0 in favor of the sleaze, see?
Yeah, it's now, really
I was involved because, and there were some other cases like this, a friend of the court, what is it, Amici Curie, as I recall from my Latin, and we're friends of the court, and we stick up for the sleaze. you're always in company with these guys.
Well, and
they ruled in favor of the sleaze. First Amendment. You can't. You can parody these, or you can write anything you want. And there was a worse case with there was a Larry Flint case.
Mm-hmm.
Larry Flint had a cartoon in Hustler magazine doing a parody on a whiskey ad. There was a whiskey ad. I don't know, Johnny Walker Black or whatever it was. And it was about, when was your first time? When was the first time you had a drink? You know, they had these wholesome pictures of father and son, you know, Father's Day, the adult son, and we're having a glass of Johnny Walker Black. When was your first time? Flint does a parody, when was your first time? So obviously, this is Hustler magazine, and so when was your first time you had sex? And so they depict... this is rough here. This is they depict.
It's Jerry Falwell. Mm.
They depict Jerry Falwell with his mother and a goat. Again, this was the Warren Burger Court. I think 9-0, unanimous.
Defending
in
the
favor
right to free speech
of Larry Flint.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I love court cases. You know, it's the Supreme Court is divided into two groups. And right now, they are very evenly divided. You have four liberals, you have four conservatives, and then in the middle, the swing vote being that of Justice Anthony Kennedy. But like many of us, get your symbol ready. Like many of us, Justice Kennedy doesn't swing like he used to. So, on the liberal side, they believe in a living, breathing Constitution, right? Flexible, living, breathing, constitutional.
Mm-hmm.
On the conservative side, on the other hand, they call themselves constitutional originalists, cast in stone. Nothing changes. Every morning, Justice Scalia says to his secretary, get me James Madison on the phone. He's not in. I'll talk to Jefferson. They claim to know the exact intent of the founders. Now, the problem with that is that 230 years ago, we were not a pluralistic society. Today, we're a pluralistic society, but not back then. I don't think back then there were that many gay and lesbian Mexican Muslims on the Mayflower, but I could be wrong.
You could be wrong.
So,
there
are, we're a pluralistic society. For example, I have a friend who lives in Minnesota, and he's half Swedish, half Palestinian. His name is Yasser Ubetcha.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Do I need a symbol on that one? Hold on. That wasn't really worth a symbol. I'm sorry. It was cute. It was not, you know, you usually do better than that one, with all due respect.
It gets a huge laugh.
If you could do like, yes, sir, that's my baby, that would be the
In Minnesota, it gets a big one.
Well, yeah, in Minnesota, they're kind of desperate. Not that we aren't in Greeley. But actually, I think we kind of strayed far afield. You were going to say that you did the court case with Two Live Crew, that you argued with them in favor of.
I wasn't in the court. I mean, there were a lot of... Like Garrison Keillor was part of that. We just signed a thing, and then the lawyers used it. That's all you do. You just, are you with us on this? And they take people who do this kind of a thing for a living. And there were a hundred. There were cartoonists on the list, and all of that.
Speaking of people who do this kind of thing for a living, do you watch Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert? And what are your thoughts on that kind of television?
Well, those two guys are they reign supreme now. They're the Rosetta Stone. They really do. The thing, Colbert is a little more interesting. It's a little more complicated because. He's pretending to be a conservative.
See? Right.
So the conservatives, some of them don't get it. It doesn't matter. Got them. He's got them rooting for him. See? The liberals see through the parody, except the liberals who are in their subconscious, they think, wow, maybe he's not kidding. Maybe that's the real Stephen. And so I read an article about, you know, that sheriff in Arizona, Sheriff Arpaio, Joe Arpaio in Phoenix.
Well, the immigrants and all that?
They're the immigrants, and he puts them in a tent out in the middle of the Arizona desert in middle of summer. And then he would brag that to punish some of them, he'd make them wear ladies' underwear. See?
Oh, good God.
So in this article, Arpaio is on the Colbert Show, and before he goes on, he says to the producer, he brought some of the underwear. See? He says, hey, this is what I make my prisoners wear, and I thought it would be kind of funny if I showed that to Stephen. And the producer said, no, Sheriff, we won't be doing that.
Really?
Oh. Yeah. Yeah.
That's a missed opportunity right there.
And, she said, no, we're not going to do that. And don't try to be funny because he will top you, see. So then Colbert comes in and he says, Sheriff, I want you to know that my character is an a-hole, see. And that was very revealing. He said, my character. Right. So that shows you that it's a parody. It's a put-on. And he says, your job is to set me straight, see, which I thought was pretty good.
Hmm.
I never saw the show. I never saw the Arpaio show. But anyway, that's the thing with Colbert. It's brilliant, but he can say anything.
Yeah. I was kind of hoping you'd say that Colbert walked out there wearing women's underwear and really took the joke.
Well, you know what would have happened? It would have. No, that was good advice they gave the sheriff. He's enough of a butt of ridicule in himself, and it would just. They wouldn't buy it. It wouldn't be. I don't think it would be funny. I think that producer was right.
Can I ask? Is it possible to have a right-wing, really conservative, funny comedian?
Yeah. Well, he's not a comedian, but P.J. O'Rourke answers your question.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. He was from Lampoon, right, or something like that, or what?
Yeah.
I don't know the name. Yeah.
Yeah, and also.
Well, Dennis Miller, perhaps.
Dennis Miller.
Yeah. But notice Bill Maher.
Miller is not kidding.
No, maybe.
you can't trust a comedian to be absolutely sincere. But Miller comes off as a little bitter. This the way.
Well, Bill Maher was straddling the fence.
Maher comes off as it's being too hard nosed the other way. You know, these guys take themselves very seriously, and they're going to change the world and so forth.
Who makes you laugh these days? And also, who were your influences as a stand-up comedian in, like, the 60s and 70s?
Well, these days, sometimes I like Garrison Keillor. I like that company of players that he has. I laugh at him. I laugh, occasionally I'll laugh out loud at Doonesbury. Then I'll go weeks and not getting it, not getting the pop phrases. But I'll laugh at these guys. I'm a good audience member, but sometimes I'm also the kind of a guy who just sit there and be enjoying it, but not crack a smile. And we've all had guys like that in the audience. They're always in the front row, by the way.
Well, can I ask, do you ever go?
When I was a younger man, mm-hmm. I laughed at Lenny Bruce and Mort Sahl.
Oh.
And then very young, Fred Allen. People know Jack Benny sort of as people of advanced age, but nobody remembers Fred Allen. He was a radio comedian,
sure,
and he
yeah.
was very much like Keeler in that he wrote the entire show. He wrote the entire show, and he had a cast of characters, of players.
Uh-huh.
And it was a wonderful radio show. And it followed Jack Benny on the radio on Sunday nights, and they had these contrived feuds, and it was just wonderful stuff. And then Allen never made it on television. He hated television, and he wrote a book about it called Treadmill to Oblivion.
Well, perhaps true, but I don't think... I mean, you know, it's easy to knock television and radio, but where would we have been for 50 years without it? So,
well, I do. Yeah, I do the same thing with the modern technology now. Do we really care that David Gregory has tweets? I mean, do we really want to know that he had a tuna fish sandwich?
I do. I think that's really important.
Well, I'm wrong. Then I'm wrong. But I could be wrong. I wrote a parody on that. As I Twitter my personal affairs, the answer to a narcissist's prayers, I am sad, I am bitter, I am glad, Twitter, assuming that anyone cares.
Yeah.
My homepage, my Facebook, you see, fascinating to every degree, it is oh so compelling. My head, it is swelling. My favorite person is me. Thank you.
We're talking with Mark Russell. Mark, do you have a couple more minutes with us?
Yes.
Great.
No, I've got to be in Cleveland a week from Thursday, but I can
we can manage that. We'll take it real slow then. You were in this is perhaps the most surprising thing, with all due respect. I mean, I'm a small little 5'4" scrawny kind of a Jew. Well, scrawny with a middle-aged belly now. I look at you.
Yeah.
And there's hope for me. But you were in the Marines.
You got a problem with that?
Well, no, actually, no.
Why don't I knock you right across the room?
Well, that makes me wonder, A, how you became so liberal, and B, how you go from being a Marine to a comedian.
There are, Art Buchwald is no longer with us. He was a liberal Marine. Jim Lehrer, Marine captain, is left of center, shall we say. I'm conservative on a lot of things, but I was a Marine, and... my main job was to guide naval gunfire. I was a radio operator guiding naval gunfire on a target island in Hawaii. It was just a mile-long rock. There was nothing on it but things they'd use for targets, trees and old trucks and things. And that's what I did. And thanks to me, there was never any communist infiltration on that island.
I think we all owe you a great debt of service for that.
Thank you.
But do you regret being in the military? Was it?
Do you regret?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
No, I'm proud of it. They gave me I've done some benefits for them. There's an outfit, the Marine outfits all over the place that have schools for troubled children and so forth. And I went down to Florida, did a benefit. They gave me a Marine cap, you know, so I got the Marine cap. And so the next day after they got Bin Laden, I went down to the White House just to walk around.
Yeah.
And I had grabbed the hat. I wasn't really conscious that I had the hat on, but wearing it down there, I got two Semper Fis, and thank you for your service.
Yeah, man. Well, once a Marine, always a Marine. That's why it's
that's
kind of...
That's correct.
Yeah.
There are no ex-Marines except for one, Lee Harvey Oswald.
Oh, well. Was there an official excommunication thing, or you just did?
There really has been. I mean, there's no such thing as an ex-Marine, but Lee Harvey.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we are talking to ex-Marine Mark Russell here on Dave's Gone By. Can I ask, I'll bet this must have happened in the years that you were doing your PBS specials and doing lots and lots and lots of gigs. Did you ever hear from presidents and other people that you poked fun of?
No, they don't do that. They never do that. They would seal their own doom if it even appeared that they didn't have a sense of humor.
No, but did you ever get a letter from a president, or did you ever do a...
No, what you do, you get letters from supporters, staff members, not White House, but I would hear from staffers, proud staff members of particular senators or congressmen. Oh, he's a good man, and don't pick on him and all that, but it's mild stuff. In fact, if you didn't get any of that flack, you wouldn't be doing it right.
But it's funny, you instantly took the question as being flack, when I meant it as almost like a pat on the back and saying, keep doing what you're doing kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah, they do that. They would do that. They would in a crowd with witnesses. They would literally pat you on the back and say, yeah, keep it up. We need this. We need to be kept in line and all of that. But you never get that from somebody who might have been indicted that day.
Oh, well, no. I would imagine they were kind of busy on that particular day.
Yeah.
Were your parents supportive of...
Very supportive.
Yeah.
They were kind of like showbiz parents, meaning they weren't in showbiz. They were just normal people, but they just loved it, and they would take my brother and me to nightclubs. I mean, can you imagine on a school night in Buffalo where I grew up, and we'd go and Buffalo had these nightclubs, and we'd on a school night they'd take us to go see Duke Ellington.
Wow, good for them!
Can you imagine that? And that's why I. That's why it took me two summer schools to graduate from high school.
Huh. Well, but then again, in watching those shows with your parents, do you feel that was a major influence of your being able to say, I'm going to get up in front of people?
Yeah, but originally, the idea of doing any comedy was sort of unrealistic, but just to be in some kind of music. And so as a kid piano player, and I had a band, and we played dances and weddings and stuff. So that was very very influential, just to be on stage. And they had the movie theaters. Cities had at least one big movie theater that had stage shows. In the middle of the day, there'd be people lined up down the street to see. To see a band or a comedian. Usually there was a band, like a Tommy Dorsey band or something, and then there'd be a singer, maybe a juggler, and a comedian. And that was it. It was the tail end of vaudeville. I mean, vaudeville died out in the 30s, but there was a residue of it still. They didn't call it vaudeville, but they were stage shows in these big old movie palaces that are still in some cities. Some of them closed. I remember the Paramount in Denver, which I played a number of times in your area there. And but a tremendous, tremendous influence.
Wow. Well, we have had this marvelous time talking with the wonderful Mark Russell. I want to ask you, and I ask this of everybody who comes on the show, I want to make sure if you are doing something that people get to know about it. So you have a website. An official that you maintain.
I do. What is it?
As markrussell.net, I believe.
Thank you.
So people can go there. I don't know if you have any record albums there or videos or... Do you have
record
stuff
albums? What are they, Daddy?
Sorry. DVD, CDs, DVDs, MP3s. That does put me back just as much as it does you. That's...
Yeah, I've got a 78 coming out. I've got these albums. I made some albums, some CDs, and I tell people this is old material. so keep refrigerated.
Oh, yeah, well, but it's funny. It depends. Sometimes
yeah, they're things... little time capsules, but the information is on the website. And
I mean, there you have it. You can say things have a short shelf life and then they're not, you know, something that's funny on a 10 on a Monday is a 3 on a Tuesday.
Sometimes.
Yeah, but,
yeah, it's like cheap wine, you know. By Friday, it's vinegar.
Well, yes and no. But then again, you can also sometimes go back to an old David Fry record or records
yeah.
by
people. Oh, yeah, that's fun to do.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So it's not necessarily all like, oh, it's completely
you get your history. And I have no problem with people saying, well, the kids today, they're getting their news off the late shows. I have no problem with that because you're getting the news anyway. The setups are what happened that day. Now, they're done with attitude, obviously.
Right.
But you're not going to watch those shows without knowing what's going on in current events.
Right, and the host will make sure, unless the news is very obvious, he'll do a line or two to make sure that the people know what the joke is that they're setting up. He'll say,
yeah.
Did you hear that dot, 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 dot,
that's
dot?
Right. Well. Although there's less of that required today because of the mass communications. And so it's more fun if you just do the good evening, ladies and gentlemen, Newt Gingrich. And there's gets a laugh right
there. Well, yeah, it would get a laugh from me, that's for sure. So to hear a little bit of the old laughter after we go out with Mark Russell, we're going to play a clip I found here on YouTube going back to the political campaign of 1976. That should tell you something. You're a little spring chicken that you were talking,
yeah.
According to this YouTube clip, you're talking about Jimmy Carter and Jerry Brown and a guy named Ronald Reagan. So we're going to hear that when we go out. But I want to ask the last question to the wonderful Mark Russell. What do you do when you're not running for a piece of paper, making sure you get a joke down? What are your hobbies at this time of life?
I polish silver and brass. If I see a neighbor's brass knocker needs buffing up, I leave my business card under my professional name, Mr. Knockers.
Mr. Knockers, very nice.
I am Mr. Knockers. My grandchildren know me as Mr. Knockers. I'm afraid if you Google that, goodness knows what you'd get in return.
Well, you know, oddly enough, a few weeks ago we had on this program a comedian named Rusty Warren. I don't know if you know, if you ever remember her from the 1950s and 60s.
I do.
So her song was Bounce Your Boobies.
Wow.
Knock Your Knockers, oh yes. So
You interviewed her?
Yeah, she is
alive.
Just about 2-3 months ago, yeah.
Well, that's wonderful. That's what I was going to say. Wow.
So
yeah. She had these wooden knockers up. Was the yeah, that's
exactly,
right.
You know.
Yeah. Is she still working?
No. She lives magnificent. She was one of those people who invested very well and ran her career very smartly. So she lives in Hawaii. She's not in the best of health, but she, so she isn't playing golf anymore.
That's nice.
But because she's in her mid-80s at this point, but she's great, and she was wonderful to talk to, as have you been. It's just been an absolute delight.
Thank you, Mark Russell.
Everybody go to markrussell.net, and I want to thank you so much, Mr. Russell, for being with us.
Well, it's been a joy. Remember, what happens in Greeley stays in Greeley.
Thank you, Mark Russell. Bye-bye.
See you later. Bye.